Welcome. This morning I want to talk about transforming anger. This is a really complicated topic, so I want to talk about it a little bit just to get us really thinking about our relationship to it. Israel and Hamas agreed to begin a ceasefire today after something like 15 months of brutal warfare. I did catch a really short headline on the radio as I was driving up here today, and it sounds like, from what I've heard, 3 Israeli hostages have been released, and there was at least a paraphrased quote from President Biden that the guns have stopped for the time being. So, like you, I'm really filled with hope that things will move in the direction of peace, or at least in terms, or at least a state of detente. But I'm also aware of the history between these two sides and how anger has hardened into mutual hatred. So at the same time, I fear that it could be a very, very bumpy road. Last Wednesday, when I first heard about the agreement, I caught the tail end of a recorded speech from the Middle East on the radio, and the speaker said, "We will not forget. We will not forgive." I turned in too late to know which side the speaker was on, but it occurred to me that this might be one of the few points on which both sides agree, not to forget, not to forgive. I hope not. So with that in mind, well, I just want to say I know our hearts go out to the unbelievable number of people who have died and who continue to suffer the ripples of any kind of anger, especially at this level, go out so far and wide and reach all around the globe. So I wanted to talk about anger. As Zen practitioners, and simply for us as caring human beings, if we really want to ease the suffering we see around us, it's important that we look deeply at the anger that arises within us and learn how to transform it for ourselves. If we can do that, if we can learn where anger comes from, recognize it when it arises, and know how to change that hot, burning, reactive response or reactivity into a more helpful response, we can help others learn how to do the same thing. I have to say, when I first heard this phrase, transforming anger, from teachers, when I started to practice Zen, I was really skeptical. To me, it struck me like kind of a beautiful fantasy, or what we call Dharma candy, start practicing Zen, and you will never have to be troubled by this difficult emotion of anger ever again. Of course, that was the way I took it because of my skeptical mind. But over time, I realized that we can transform it. Maybe not forever, but from moment to moment, and deal with it as it arises. We all have different experiences with anger. Something that might enrage me might not bother you at all, and vice versa. The mental and physical experience differs for each of us. And I think if we look really closely at it, it appears differently in different circumstances based on how it touches the deep parts of us that feel attacked and our response to that. And I think we've all learned different strategies for dealing with it. Unfortunately, some of those strategies are really hurtful. Hurtful not only to others if we respond in retaliation, but also hurtful for us. When we experience anger, we suffer, not just from the hurt we perceive coming from outside of us, but from the experience itself. I think we all know the word for Buddha's first noble truth. It's dukkha. Dukkha is described as this feeling of contraction, this feeling of suffering, this tightness. And my teacher told some of us a number of years ago that there is another word called sukha, which is a feeling of spaciousness, freedom, and ease. So when we experience this, we have a flurry of mental activity. How do I deal with this? What has this person done to me? But we also have this energetic response in our body. So at the end of the day, if we're willing to look at this and get to the bottom of things, I think we have to find our own way. That doesn't mean we have to do it in isolation, but I think we have to be courageous in really looking at where it comes from and how we can get more of a healthy relationship with it. This is easier said than done, as I think we all know. As one of our Zen ancestors said, thorny jungle everywhere. So I hope what I'm talking about today might encourage you to explore this aspect of your practice and maybe spark helpful conversations, either within our Sangha or with family and friends who you are close with. In the Zen tradition and the Buddhist tradition in general, we're urged to look inside us. And I want to talk, just to get this conversation started, about three different things we would be helpful to become really aware of and really mindful of us, mindful of on an ongoing basis. The first is called attachment. When we become angry, we often assume that it's been caused by an external force. He or she did this to me. Maybe a friend, a colleague, a family member, total stranger. But in the Buddhist tradition, the main cause of the anger also may lie in our deep attachment. And what are we most attached to? Any brave soul? Jake?
Ourself.
Exactly, exactly. As soon as we make me, we make its opposite automatically. When I make me, we have a tendency to make not me or other. Two sides of the same coin. And we expend an extraordinary amount of time and energy nurturing, protecting, even promoting in a way, or curating this idea we have of self. So when we perceive that someone, say a friend, challenges, or I should say when we perceive that someone challenges or diminishes this me, anger sparks, and for many of us, we have an urge to retaliate. Even if this friend has spoken to us with the best intentions, maybe about some difficulty that needs to be sorted out, we might notice that anger has replaced what we know about them with a stand-in nemesis. We stop trusting this person, maybe a little, maybe a lot. We doubt that we really know them, so we feel unsafe. So as I said before, anger does real harm, not only based on our response to it, but also to us. Dukkha appears. And that's natural. It happens in many, many different ways. It also tends to sever the connection that we naturally share with others in the world at large. Makes us feel more isolated. As we practice and train in Zen, we become increasingly familiar with the workings of our mind. During formal practice, we're taught to sit and simply be present and observe the change that is happening within us and all around us. Just being. We become familiar with the mercurial states of thoughts that come and go, And over time, we learn to watch them arise and disappear without automatically having to react to them. So this gives us some more freedom to be responsive to situations rather than live in this state of reactivity. Another source of anger has nothing at all to do with facing an adversary. It's about being forgetful about the fact that, as Buddha taught, everything in the universe is in a state of continual change. I think most of us who come here don't have too much trouble seeing this for ourselves. Some things change really quickly. Other things change over a long, long period of time. That makes it easy to forget that it's happening to absolutely everyone and everything. So this includes you and I and the world around us. Some of us love change, fresh, exciting, new. Others dig their heels in and really just abhor it and maybe hide from it. But either way, change is a constant. But when we experience changes that don't suit us, don't suit this me that Jake was talking about, this me that we cherish so much, even if it's getting, say, a scratch on a new car, nobody dies. But we can still become enraged. So we like certain aspects of change, others not so much. Another example that I'm very familiar with is when we look in the mirror and we see that this very body and mind is changing. And our bodies become more painful. The dream of who we thought we have been for so many years is no longer looking back at us. This can be absolutely shocking. So we can get really angry simply at the change that doesn't suit this cultivated idea of I. But again, as Zen practitioners, we need to remain aware that all is flux, not only as an intellectual idea, but by perceiving it in our day-to-day lives. There's a story that a lot of you have heard about Zen Master Sung San, who during a ceremony seemed to be doing some, developed some kind of tic with his mouth. And people started thinking he was in some kind of health crisis. So afterwards, people asked him what he was doing, and he said he was chanting, changing, 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 changing. So I think we could all use a little bit more of that top of mind as we walk through our environment. Can we see the changes and see them in ourselves? The third and final point I want to make today is that we're deeply conditioned by innumerable influences which form our beliefs, our opinions, our values, and our prejudices this inheritance shapes our worldview. And for most of us, it remains hidden and unexamined. So we mistake our opinions, our preferences, for the way the world should be. But it's only our idea. And when we come against people who have other beliefs, opinions, values, and prejudices, we feel threatened. The very idea of the way the world should be feels threatened, and we often become incensed. I don't know if you've noticed any of that going on in our country right now, culturally and politically. This isn't one aspect of karma. Karma is a whole other topic that we don't have time for today. But it tends to be so integrated that it's difficult for us to see. Sometimes it's not so difficult to see other people's karma, but it's much harder to see our own. One of the things that I've found that's helped me, and you may have experienced the same thing, is that over time, we might notice that certain thoughts, memories, or feelings pop into our head more frequently than others. We start seeing a pattern of thought, and we start seeing a reactivity to those thoughts. That's actually, it can be uncomfortable, but that's actually a great gift. It's a way, one of the ways we can actually see our karmic inheritance and show us where we need to concentrate our practice on. So when we find ourselves repeatedly stewing over a thought that's appeared, we can get a glimpse of the things that tend to bind us, which brings us back to attachment.